season at Redding Garden of Lights, open November 21st through January 4th at the Sundial Bridge and Turtle Bay in Redding, California. Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with over 2 million lights, plus holiday-themed music, food and drinks, glowing swings, and more. New for 2025, upgrade your experience with a train ride on the new Turtle Express, adorned with festive lights and wintry displays. Redding Garden of Lights is presented by Dignity Health Mercy Medical Center Redding. Buy tickets online at turtlebay.org.
Good morning, Redding. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
Everyone loves the nativity scene. Where did all that begin? Well, actually, it began in the 13th century, the 1200s, with St. Francis of Assisi. He wanted to find a new way, really, to celebrate the nativity.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Dr. Ken Calvert, professor of ancient history here at Hillsdale College. Today we talk about the history of Christmas. Also later on in today's program, Dr. Chloe Carmichael is with us. Her new book is Can I Say That? Why Free Speech Matters and How to Use It Fearlessly. First, we're joined by Dr. Ken Calvert. He is professor of ancient history here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Calvert, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Scott. Good to be here.
Digging into the history of Christmas today. Tis the season.
It is.
And there's a long history. Thankfully, we have you, the expert, to join us.
Right.
Let's start at the beginning.
Okay.
So how and maybe why and when did Christmas first come to be celebrated in the Christian tradition?
Right. So we look at December 25th, you know, as the date. Mm. And there has been all kinds of confusion about why that date is the date that we celebrate Christmas. Since about the 18th century, the 1700s AD, there has been this idea that somehow Constantine established the December 25th as the date. And what befuddles me as an ancient historian is there is absolutely no evidence that Constantine made that happen. They also say that he established Sunday as the day for, you know, celebration, that there are even people who say that he wrote the New Testament or had, you know, so all kinds of strange things about Constantine that come out. Constantine, you know, you can debate who he was. I've got my own opinions about that guy. But in the end, he actually, during his reign, we find confirmation that Christmas had been celebrated on December 25th for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It shows up on a calendar in the city of Rome, not in Constantinople where Constantine is at, but in the city of Rome, it shows up that December 25th is the date. Now, where did they get that? And how long had Christians been doing that? And when you look at the evidence, it actually goes back quite early.
Talking to Dr. Ken Calvert, professor of ancient history, about the history of Christmas, how would early Christians then celebrate Christmas? And when would it begin to look like something we'd recognize today?
Right. I think it's really hard for us to understand this. There are moments in the history of the early church, particularly in the 3rd and the 4th century, where we have statements regarding the celebration of Christ's birth in relation or in contrast to the pagans. Jerome of Jerusalem talks about this. Other writers talk about this, Clement of Alexandria. And what they portray here is the idea that celebrations among the pagans during this time, during December, with the Saturnalia or other celebrations, are celebrations typical to the pagan celebration of too much food, too much drink, sexual immorality, being involved in all of the corruption of wealth and power. And that is so typical of the Romans and their worship of their gods, because mm-hmm. they viewed the gods as having made them these great and powerful, wealthy and luxurious people, mm-hmm. right? And Christianity is just the opposite. It's about humility. It's about bowing before the true God of the universe and the true King of the universe. And so what do the Christians seem to do during this era? There is the statement, okay, they fill themselves with food. They fill themselves with wine and all of these gifts. What are we going to do? We're going to give the poor food. We're going to give the wine to the poor, make their day happy. We're going to give gifts to the poor. And this is an important part of really the tradition of Christian practice during Christmas. And you see this even in the 12 days of Christmas and in the octave of Christmas, that during this time, Christians are showing mercy and grace to their neighbors, to the poor, to those who are in need, which is exactly what Christ, you know, expects of us. You know, Matthew 25, this idea of reaching out to the prisoner and to the mm-hmm. poor and to the, you know, those who are in need, the sick. And so this is what Christmas seems to be for the Christians.
What elements of our modern Christmas celebration are perhaps distinctly American inventions even?
Right. So I think, St. Nicholas riding on a sleigh being pulled by reindeer, you know, that's us. That's right. Really a 1950s invention,
yeah.
Now become kind of standard, and the whole story of Rudolph and all that kind of thing. And, you know, again, I don't want to be a curmudgeon and to, you know, to pop everybody's bubble. But, you know, the idea that Santa Claus is going house to house to house and giving gifts, that's basically St. Nicholas, mm-hmm. you know. And so, you know, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. You know, adding a sleigh with reindeer, that comes out of Nordic tradition. And, you know, you follow the Dutch and Norwegian and the Nordic traditions. You have some of these stories connecting there. Now, in the Netherlands, people are a little embarrassed that he was served by a number of black slaves who helped him with his work. We've done away with that uh-huh. now, and I think the Dutch have done away with that as well. But, you know, all kinds of things that attended this story. And, you know, peculiarly American, especially after World War II, it becomes much more of a commercial kind of enterprise, mm-hmm. much more of a materialistic kind of idea. And we lose a little bit of sight of it, but there is in all of this, you know, the giving of gifts, which is what Christ is to us, St. Nicholas, you know, delivering these gifts, which is a beautiful idea, that's still there. There's still that kernel, you know, in the midst of it. And a time of joy and of light, you know, the lights on the tree, you know, Christ is the light coming into the world. All of that is still pointing back to the original meaning.
If we look at how Christmas has evolved in some ways that you've laid out, what does that tell us about the way that faith and culture interact and how the sacred and secular can influence each other?
Right. And this, too, has been a part of the Christian story all along. For instance, trying to explain the nativity, trying to explain the incarnation to a pagan world where a god would never become a human being in the way that they're describing. The Christians are attempting to do this, and you head off into all kinds of strange directions and heresies and things like that. Finally, the church comes around to the Council of Nicaea and Council of Chalcedon and is able to give Christians the language to be able to express what's going on in Scripture, right, and what's there. And this is true, you know, all through history, all through the history of the church, that in trying to explain very difficult things, right, we can go off the rails fairly easily. And in the modern world, too, you know, trying to explain this within a secular society that is dominated by, you know, scientific empiricism, how do you get after all of this and try to help people understand that we believe it's not a myth that this actually happened, that God actually became flesh? And so, you know, to use the language to kind of try and explain to folks, you know, what all of this means, that there is more to existence than what we can just touch and feel, that there is a God, you know, getting to that point of believing You know, that there is a God, there is a mind, a logos that has created. And of course, logos, you know, central in the Gospel of John, that itself is a Christmas story. That itself is part of the nativity.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word, you know, when you want to know who God, well, Jesus' true Father is, you know, there, you know, in the Gospel of John, it's stated very clearly, yeah. Right? And so getting people around to the idea that there is a logos, there is a mind, that there is a person who not only created all of this that we can study and pursue, and by God's grace, we have the reason to be able, the logic to be able to do this. What a wonderful miracle is man to be able to look at these things.
We'll continue our trek into the history of Christmas next with Dr. Ken Calvert from Hillsdale College. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
According to the Farmer's Almanac, we're getting a dry, mild winter in the western states this year, honey.
Oh, please. You say that every year. We're still getting new wiper blades. Premier Oil Change has their buy one, get one free sale, and I'm not passing that up.
But the Almanac...
The only forecast I care about is buy one, get one free. Get in the car.
At Premier Oil Change, buy one wiper blade and get the second one free now through January 7th. No appointment needed. Just cruise on in, grab a free beverage, hop on the free Wi-Fi, and earn free oil changes with Premier Rewards. All while trained technicians take care of our thorough 30-point service. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com or visit us in Palisadro at the Holiday Market Shopping Center, in Redding on Lake Boulevard next to Waterworks Park, or in Anderson across from the Round Table Pizza. Stop making excuses and come to the home of the friendly oil change today. Your wipers will thank you.
Your friendly oil change. Premier, your friendly oil change.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
What does comfort mean to you? At Alliance Heating and Air, we understand your HVAC system is the most important system in your home, affecting everything from air quality to temperature control. That's why everybody calls us, delivering perfect comfort. Invest in year-round comfort with an Alliance tune-up for just $99. Plus, we offer comprehensive maintenance plans starting at $15.95 per month. Remember, everybody calls us at 22 12 642.
Everybody calls us.
Do you have something you'd like to get painted? Then bring it to Victory Powder Coating. Powder coating is a durable, colorful, environmentally friendly alternative to paint. It's useful in automotive, agricultural, decorative, and high-temperature applications. Victory Powder Coating has become the North State leader in powder coating applications and metal finishing. They specialize in large industrial items like truck beds, agricultural equipment, and trailers. They're dedicated to providing superior work and outstanding customer care. Consider Victory Powder Coating for your next project. Victory Powder Coating.
This is Colonel Danny Gilliam, the host of Frontlines of Freedom, the nation's largest military news and talk radio show. We address the most pressing issues facing the security of our nation, our armed forces, our veterans, and their families. Please join us every Saturday morning from 6 to 8 on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR, your talk radio show.
Hi, this is Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. Have you been affected by some of the recent changes in business ownership here in Shasta and Tehama counties? These changes follow a national trend where national companies buy up locally owned small family companies and change the culture and staff and pricing of their product. That has occurred here in the North State also. Three locally owned propane companies have been purchased by large national companies. If you're like me and you prefer to deal with locally owned companies, you may be interested to know Shasta Gas Propane, which has been around for 28 years, now has the third generation working in the company. For locally owned, family operated service and care, give us a call at 530-365-3793. Thank you.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram, talking with Dr. Ken Calvert, professor of ancient history here at Hillsdale College, as we talk about the history of Christmas. Dr. Calvert.
We've talked a lot about different traditions and symbols. I don't think we've mentioned the Christmas tree itself. Where does that come into the picture?
According,
and what does it symbolize?
Yeah, according to my reading, and again, this hasn't been entirely comprehensive, but that the first Christmas trees were with Queen Victoria in Buckingham Palace. Why did she choose this? Well, you know, that whole family is related to Germanic tradition and to the Germans. And, many of the kings that came before her, monarchs came before her, didn't even speak English. You know, all they knew was German. But, I think from what I've read, is that this is a tradition that she brought perhaps from Germanic background, but wanted to install and instill in English culture a symbol that was truly a symbol of Christmas. And what is the tree? The tree, I don't know, a symbol of life, of greenery. And on it, you know, the lights, the candles that were originally on that tree. And the idea of a creche, of a nativity scene, fairly early related to the Christmas tree. The idea that fruit grows on a tree. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is a symbol of life and health. Also part of this, that mm-hmm. the round, Christmas ornaments that we buy and put on our tree, you know, symbols of fruit growing on a tree and of life. You know, all of that is a little bit puzzling, honestly, to everyone. But the Christmas tree practice and image is decidedly takes hold in England and in America during the Victorian age, and then becomes standard, mm-hmm. you know, throughout. Yeah.
And are you a live Christmas tree person or a fake Christmas
tree
person?
Well, I tell you what, while the kids were young, it was always live. But after a time, we get tired of vacuuming up the needles. And here, as we grow older and our children are all grown up and have their own families and their own Christmas traditions, or trees, we have now moved to the fake, which actually is pretty amazing.
Yes.
how soft they are and how realistic they look.
A lot of advances in fake tree technology over the decade.
Right, exactly. Another spinoff of Christmas, you know.
And then Dr. Calvert, what about the creche? What about the nativity scene?
Everyone loves the nativity scene and the creche. And every once in a while, you know, you'll see these poor people in the cold outside acting out the nativity scene, and for lots of churches are of course the children in their parents' bathrobes, and you know, acting out
I did it when I was young.
Where did all that begin? Well, actually, it began in the 13th century, the 1200s, with Saint Francis of Assisi. He wanted to find a new way, really, to celebrate the nativity. And he was able to get, you know, this group of people from the community that he was in at that time together, and the monks that he was working with, get them all together. Live animals in a manger, you know, the whole thing that we have come to, you know, imagine. He was the first one that we know of who did that. And all of it very much a part of the ministry of St. Francis, who really wanted people to love the Christ child.
Is there any particular tradition or symbol for you that really captures the beauty, the truth of Christmas?
Yeah, I think that for me, the most important symbols, honestly, when Christians bring them into their Christmas celebration, is honestly a symbol of the cross. Hmm. And in within the Catholic tradition, I'm Catholic, the crucifix. You know, Paul says, I boast in nothing but Christ and Him crucified. You know, that's all we have to boast in, all we have to hope in. And that, the birth of Jesus, You know, Christmas celebration is always connected with Easter. It is always connected with the Passover, with the death and resurrection of Jesus, the death of sin, the resurrection to new life. I think that any Christian family who, you know, really incorporates that into their celebration of Christmas is just doing the right thing. And that's something that I always appreciate about Christmas, is bringing all of that together, the whole message, right? Yeah.
We hear critiques of the Christmas holiday today. It is too materialistic. The focus is too broadly upon giving, receiving gifts. Yeah. Maybe it's not inclusive enough for a pluralistic society like the one we have here in America. Is Christmas still a good?
Yeah, I think it is. I have to say that. I think that it is, you know, the word Christmas, it tells us it's kind of owned by the Christians, right? And even if we say holidays, you know, it's still a holy day.
Right.
And so, you know, what do you do with that? Well, I think there's a way in which, you know, across a pluralistic society, we can all appreciate this. Within Judaism, this is the time of Hanukkah, and that echoes back to the War of the Maccabees, in which the temple is cleansed, and you know, there's oil in the lamps, and they're able to last out against a pagan oppressor. There is a sense in which we can, you know, affirm this idea of freedom from the oppression of sin, and you know, of the oppression that's upon us. Within Islam, there is a great appreciation for Jesus. He's not divine, but he is a great prophet. And in fact, within Islam, there is an appreciation of Mary, more so than in many other religious expressions. And so, you know, there's a way to talk about that and to celebrate that, with our Muslim neighbors. With those who are, you know, in the secular world, maybe if I have a libertarian friend, you know, this is a great opportunity to make some money and provide a forward movement for our economy and give us that Black Friday in which, you know, all of the budgets are met.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that this is a moment of celebration. You know, why not? You know, pop open a bottle of champagne and enjoy that. You know, I think the folks that are going to be less likely to join with us are those who are just going to reject all celebrations of a god, all celebrations of a religious nature. But even among, you know, our atheist friends and fellow citizens, I think just the idea of a time of joy, a time of celebration, I think they can certainly understand. And in God's general grace to all of our fellow citizens, you know, he's pouring out to them an opportunity to see what's possible, right?
Dr. Ken Calvert is professor of ancient history here at Hillsdale College. We talk today about the history of Christmas. Dr. Calvert, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you, Scott. A great pleasure.
Up next, Dr. Chloe Carmichael joins us. Her new book is Can I Say That? Why Free Speech Matters and How to Use It Fearlessly. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Out here, Christmas isn't found in bright lights or fancy gifts. It's in the hands that help, the hearts that give, and the neighbors who always show up when it matters most. At Grange Co-op, we're more than a store. We're a family of farmers, friends, and believers who never stop hoping for a better tomorrow. This season, let's gather close and celebrate what truly matters. Love, community, and the magic of being together. Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays from Grange Co-op.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300
a reputation for excellence since 1965.
Celebrate the holiday season at Redding Garden of Lights. Open on select dates now through January 4th at the Sundial Bridge and Turtle Bay. Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with over 2 million lights. Plus holiday-themed music, food and drinks, glowing swings, model trains, and more. Upgrade your experience with a train ride on the new Turtle Express. Redding Garden of Lights is presented by Dignity Health Mercy Medical Center Redding. Turtle Bay members save $5 per ticket. Buy tickets online for the best price at turtlebay.org.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts, Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa and Janet Chandler. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archive link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
John Cruz here with America Outdoors Radio. Be sure to tune in this weekend and catch the latest in fishing, hunting, conservation, and destinations. If you love spending time in the field or on the water or in the woods, you're going to love this show. It's America Outdoors Radio, the fastest growing outdoors radio show in the nation. Tune in Saturdays from noon to 1 p.m. on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR, your talk radio.
Hi, it's Mark from Haven Humane Society. Are you looking to add to your family? We have puppies, kittens, small critters, and farm animals. Each year, we have thousands of amazing animals looking for homes come into our lives, and we hope to have them join yours. Follow us on social media and find our links on our website at havenhumane.org. Watch our weekly content on YouTube, like our Mark's Monday mashup, when we talk about what's going on and introduce you to our team and adoptable animals. Get involved. Volunteer. Thank you for all your continued support. Together, we are moving closer to our ultimate goal of a North State with no more homeless pets.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. We're joined by Dr. Chloe Carmichael. She is a clinical psychologist and USA Today best-selling author. You can find out more about her and this book we'll be discussing today at freespeechtoday.com. And the book is Can I Say That? Why Free Speech Matters and How to Use It Fearlessly. Dr. Carmichael, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Scott. It's great to be with you.
Thank you for the book as well. It's a very interesting read, and portions are unlike, I think, what you'll read in other books about the similar topic, right? I want to start early, though. You mentioned that as cancel culture and self-censorship rose in the country, so did loneliness. What's the correlation between those things?
Yeah, so when we're not being honest and authentic with people about what we really think because we're afraid of being canceled, or they're not being honest because they're afraid of being canceled, it degrades the quality of our social support. So, you know, you might even be surrounded by other people, but you could feel like the loneliest person in the world if nobody really knows how each other feels because they're all afraid of cancel culture.
Is what we've lived through the past 6 years, 8 years, relatively unique in, I don't want to say human history, but I guess, I mean, human history. Is this something that we haven't really dealt with before on an interpersonal level?
That's an interesting question. So as I was researching for my book, Can I Say That? Why Free Speech Matters and How to Use It Fearlessly, I actually looked into the etymology of the word censor because I was interested in self-censorship. And your brainy Hillsdale College community probably already knows this, but I learned that the word censor actually comes from Roman times, that they had these soldiers that were actually called censors, and they would go around throughout all of the, you know, territories and tell everybody living in those, you know, Roman controlled places what words and opinions and moral viewpoints were acceptable for them to have. And that is where now we get the word censor. So, you know, in some way we might feel like this is new, but what was actually new was the concept of freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. When our country, you know, was founded, that's what was new. I'm afraid what we're experiencing now is more of a regression to the mean.
This idea that words are violence is something that is ridiculous on its face, yet has been popularly accepted in some circles. Why is it so important to draw that distinction that words, in fact, are not violence?
Yeah, Scott, you said it perfectly. It's ridiculous on its face, right? But it sounds so catchy. It is important to understand it, though. You see, it's kind of an insidious phrase because it sounds like it's just trying to communicate to people, hey, you know, words can hurt, you know? Okay, fair. That's true. But words are not violence. Violence is a very special word within our judicial system, as well as in our basic human psyche, you know, which laid the foundation for our judicial system. Humans have an innate need for reciprocity, and we have an innate understanding of the concept of self-defense. So, you know, going all the way back to, you know, an eye for an eye, or, you know, protect my home, that kind of thing. So when we start saying words are violence, what we're doing is we're setting up basically a self-defense argument for people to respond with actual violence to words that they don't like. Just like we saw at UC Berkeley yet again, you know, and I say yet again because they were one of the worst offenders in 2017. They had a terrible riot over free speech when Young America's Foundation came there. So as a clinical psychologist, I call that phrase literally a psychotic. Psychotic means broken from reality. And so when people start saying words are violence, they are breaking from reality when they're starting to, you know, glom on to the idea that if somebody says something that you don't like, it's as if they're doing violence to you, and therefore you can respond in kind.
Dr. Chloe Carmichael is with us. Her new book, Can I Say That? Why Free Speech Matters and How to Use It Fearlessly. You mentioned UC Berkeley. Why is it so hard to use free speech fearlessly on our college campuses? Why are universities ground zero for so much of this problem?
Yeah, well, there's an increasingly leftist bent. I'm sure this is no great news flash to anybody here, but there's an increasingly leftist bent at our universities. For example, in the Northeast, Scott, you want to take a guess what the liberal to conservative faculty ratio is in the Northeast? Take a guess.
I will take a guess. I will be wrong. I'll say it's something along the lines of 20 to 1.
28 to 1. Okay. You're close. It's 28 to 1. And the number is only intensifying. So colleges and universities have long been, you know, left leaning. But unfortunately, what they're doing is they're becoming more and more biased and only admitting people who think like themselves. So the tilt is getting heavier and heavier. Well, actually, what that does is it literally creates what psychologists call groupthink, where you have, you know, there's eight main ingredients for groupthink, according to Irving Yanis, the psychologist who coined the terms. And one of them is something called the self-appointed mind guards. And that's basically what the professors have become, as if it's just now supposed to be gospel that because, you know, a university says it's better to use pronouns, you know, that therefore that's some kind of a gospel. And then we have all these, you know, wonderful, young, eager minds that maybe are even appropriately deferential, like they're going to a university, they're going to a certain point defer to the professors, assuming probably they know better and know more. And it just becomes basically a leftist, it's, you know, indoctrination center. I can really see why people are calling it that. And then students are afraid to step out because they're not only socially ostracized, they're intellectually shamed because the self-appointed mind guards, you know, are suggesting that only a buffoon would think this way. And then moreover, there's another ingredient of groupthink, which is direct pressure upon dissenters. And, you know, grade point averages, that's some pretty direct pressure, letters of recommendation. I personally parroted a lot of talking points in order to get through my Ivy League education and get my PhD. So I know what it's like. And I'm so thankful for places like Hillsdale. I want my son to go there.
Dr. Chloe Carmichael with us. Can I Say That is the new book. And the first part of the book in which you lean into your training as a clinical psychologist is most interesting because, again, it's not very common to sort of approach the issue in this manner. Why do you argue that defending free speech is, in part, at least, a mental health issue?
Yeah, so, I mean, I frankly felt like I needed to do this as a public service announcement because my own profession is 90% plus liberal, and unfortunately right now free speech is coded as some kind of a right-wing issue, so there's no psychologist standing up for the mental health benefits of free speech. So that's what I wanted to give people a way to answer back and to understand if somebody tries to silence you for the, quote, mental health of others, you should explain to them that actually freedom of expression promotes cognitive development. It promotes emotional regulation. It promotes stronger social relationships. So, you know, speaking aloud is one of our most unique gifts as humans. It gives us objectivity over problems. It's been shown to increase problem-solving skills. Using emotional, you know, words to label our feelings has been shown to decrease amygdala activity, which is the part of the brain that becomes very fearful. And, you know, we're more prone, actually, to be violent and irrational when we can't talk openly. That's why, you know, use your words is one of the first things we want to teach violent offenders to do. And then we've already discussed with social support that, you know, being able to have a heart to heart with someone and tell them what you really think, that actually drops people's cortisol levels. So for a million and one reasons, speaking freely and taking your internal life and putting it into words promotes your cognitive, emotional, and social well-being.
We'll continue to speak freely next with Dr. Chloe Carmichael. Her new book is Can I Say That? I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
Hello, I'm Shannon Phillips with the McConnell Foundation. As part of Operation Holiday Salute, we would like to take a moment to thank our veterans and the brave men and women who are currently serving in the armed forces. At the McConnell Foundation, our mission is to help build better communities through philanthropy. We value excellence and integrity, using our personnel, facilities, and financial resources to create and support positive change. We are honored to be a part of Operation Holiday Salute on KCNR.
Celebrate the holiday season at Reading Garden of Lights, open November 21st through January 4th at the Sundial Bridge and Turtle Bay in Reading, California. Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with over 2 million lights, plus holiday-themed music, food and drinks, glowing swings, and more. New for 2025, upgrade your experience with a train ride on the new Turtle Express, adorned with festive lights and wintry displays. Reading Garden of Lights is presented by Dignity Health Mercy Medical Center Reading. Buy tickets online at turtlebay.org.
At Stiefel Nicholas, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel is a full-service organization with departments staffed with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is financial advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
Join me, Dr. Lauren, on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. behind the pink mic for breast cancer conversations about prevention and diagnosis, to healing stories and words from expert guests. Behind the Pink Mic is proudly sponsored by Sizzle's Kitchen and Swell Endeavor. Tune in with Dr. Lauren every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and streaming at KCNR1460.com. Behind the Pink Mic, let's talk healing, hope, and community.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram, continuing our conversation with Dr. Chloe Carmichael. Her book, Can I Say That? Why Free Speech Matters and How to Use It Fearlessly. Dr. Carmichael, the first chapter, the second chapter, talks about the gifts of language, the cognitive gifts of language, the emotional gifts of language. What do we humans get out of the exercise and expression through language?
Yeah, so it helps us to develop good ideas and discard bad ones, for example, through cognition. So, you know, we've all had the experience, right, of when we say something aloud, we even maybe realize as we say it aloud, oh, gee, that doesn't quite make sense, like now that I hear myself say it, right? Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, language is almost like breathing in that we don't think about it a lot. But if you interfere with someone's breathing, suddenly they realize it's really essential to their, you know, well-being. And speech is the same way. There's unique regions of the brain that are specifically just devoted to speech. And so when we interfere with someone's ability to speak freely, it's like we're interfering with their ability to use their brain freely. It's, to me, it's like as if we're cutting off a finger or two. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like we're literally coming at their basic human faculties and disabling them. You know, in our Constitution, the First Amendment and all of it is that these are God-given rights. And the word psychology traces to the Greek word for spirit. So I think that there's a lot of overlap there, that it's a psychological well-being issue. It's a spiritual well-being issue. It's a God-given right for us to be able to speak freely. And, you know, even with like the quote worst ideas, you know, people in the KKK or jihadi recruiters, even they, when they leave those cults, they will always say it's because somebody sat down in dialogue with them, not because somebody told them, shut up, you're not allowed to say those ideas. That just pushes ideas down, makes them fester, and actually allows people to have those ideas without even having a rational check on them.
Dr. Chloe Carmichael with us. Can I Say That is her new book, Why Free Speech Matters and How to Use It Fearlessly, in both the Cognitive Gifts of Language and Emotional Gifts of Language chapter. Reducing anxiety and depression is bullet pointed as a big factor. Is that because if we don't feel we can speak freely and say what we think or say what we believe, that we're constantly worried about what we say, and then we also feel in part that no one really knows exactly who we are?
Yeah, it's all of those things and more. So, you know, social support is absolutely a strong protective factor against clinical anxiety or depression. So we've already talked about how when people are not being themselves, of course, that's isolating and can cause anxiety and depression. But also the healthy function of anxiety is to stimulate preparation behaviors. And, you know, having productive problem-solving conversations with people where you, you know, exchange information and ideas, you label your emotions, you start to get a sense of control over them, all of those things would be productive. That would be like a treatment for anxiety, right? Mm-hmm. To come in and talk about what you're feeling. And so when we interrupt people's ability to do that, we're interrupting their ability to, we're taking away an important coping strategy. And with depression, one of the key features of depression is a sense of helplessness. Mm-hmm. And again, language is how we organize and create plans of action and, you know, summon resources amongst our support network. Depressed people, one of the first things we want to stop them from doing is retreating into themselves and isolating, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, free speech, I just think it's so important, again, because I see so many people, even members of my own profession, trying to silence people in the name of mental health, of saying, well, because of hate speech and bullying, we have to put on these really strict speech codes. And it's like that's the opposite of what we want to do if we care about mental health. And even conflict, you know, whatever's underlying this, quote, hate speech or bullying, that is still also going to be better solved through dialogue than by telling people to shut up.
Dr. Chloe Carmichael with us. More about the book at freespeechtoday.com. You address three common objections to free speech in the new book. And I wanted to ask about the what a misinformation. So we, of course, hear this today. Oh, well, free speech is great. But what about those people who are trying to intentionally lie to us or get us to feel some way by presenting false information? How do you connect free speech to this this idea of misinformation and trying to police misinformation?
Yeah, well, I mean, just think about COVID, right? Mm-hmm. We were silenced. You couldn't get on YouTube or anywhere, Twitter or anywhere, and, you know, discuss that maybe COVID had, you know, connections to a lab leak, or that maybe the vaccine wasn't going to, you know, stop the spread, or, you know, maybe we shouldn't be masking little children, or, you know, maybe masking isn't really helping anybody, or maybe mm-hmm. we should open the schools up. All of that was, you know, categorized as misinformation, and people were literally, you know, deplatformed. Even, you know, now we know by the big hand of the government behind the scenes, which is a true violation of the First Amendment, even in a legal sense, going even beyond social pressure. You know, but even going back to the times of Galileo when he was jailed for saying that the Earth orbits the sun. So no matter what, if we're worried about, quote, misinformation, the answer is to expose it, you know, through debate and through open dialogue and through robust discussion. It's through silencing people that we actually degrade the quality of our information and of our ability to have checks and balances on these, you know, self-appointed mind guards, you know, whether it be the media or universities or wherever else. We should and can think and speak for ourselves.
Part two of this book, Can I Say That, deals with tools for open dialogue. If one finds oneself in a situation in which you feel you cannot speak freely, you cannot speak your mind for whatever reason, what tools are available? What recommendations do you have?
Yeah, so I thank you for asking that, because part one of the book, as you said, is the cognitive, emotional, psychological benefits of free speech, and part two is the practical tools for speaking up as well as for listening respectfully, because both are really important for open dialogue. But there is a little section about, hey, what if you really can't speak up? What if you're not fortunate enough to be at Hillsdale and you're at some ridiculous liberal mm-hmm. school where if you say that a man cannot become a woman, you're just going to be automatically failed, and you know, maybe you don't want to go through all the legal fight and stuff, so you decide to just sing that professor's song to just get through the course. Okay. What you must at least do, in my opinion, is at the very least, it's important to journal what you really think, or to talk to a friend on a daily basis about what's happening and what you really think. And I offer some other techniques too. But the reason for this is because what you're doing in that classroom is you're doing repression and suppression. And if we do that often enough, we go into denial, where we start to lose touch with our real thoughts because we're, you know, pretending so often to do something else. We can almost stuff our feelings down so deeply that we become disconnected with them.
Chloe Carmichael, Dr. Chloe Carmichael, the book Can I Say That is much about speaking and free speech, but the end, it's five tools for self-restraint. The idea that as important as speaking up is, it's also important to listen, and it's an essential part of open dialogue. So how can we truly hear what that other person is saying in our conversation?
Yeah, so that can be hard, and I'll admit that too. I've had trouble sometimes speaking up, and sometimes when I get charged up, I'm chomping at the bit, right, to speak. And that phrase, chomping at the bit, if we think about it, it's really also, it comes to like a clenched jaw, and it's like, you know, your lips are poised to speak. It's like, even if you're not actually speaking, you're interrupting with your face sometimes in a conversation. So one of the exercises is actually just teaching people how to specifically relax their mouth, their tongue, their jaw, just, you know, silently in their head while they're listening, to just cue their face and their mouth that, like, hey, it's not time right now. It's time to listen. Another thing that can be helpful when we're hearing somebody speak and we just feel like they're talking so much nonsense that we just can't even stand it, is to think back to a time when we believed something that we now recognize as nonsense. Those of us, you know, who are, you know, over 30 can probably do that a little bit easier. I can think back to political views that I held 20, 25 years ago that make me cringe now. Mm-hmm. And so what I can do if I'm talking to somebody that's, you know, making no sense to me, and I feel like even a little bit of resentment towards them for their views, that how could they think something so ridiculous, I can remember back to some of the things that I used to think and believe, forgive myself for that, and then try to transfer that same kind of grace over to the other person.
Dr. Chloe Carmichael, a clinical psychologist, USA Today best-selling author, the new book, Can I Say That? Why Free Speech Matters and How to Use It Fearlessly. You can find more at freespeechtoday.com. Dr. Chloe Carmichael, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Ken Calvert, talking about the history of Christmas. Next week, the meaning of Christmas. And Dr. Chloe Carmichael, her new book, Can I Say That? Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You can also find extended versions of some of our interviews, like this week's with Dr. Calvert, on the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, for North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
Hello, I'm Shannon Phillips with the McConnell Foundation. As part of Operation Holiday Salute, we would like to take a moment to thank our veterans and the brave men and women who are currently serving in the armed forces. At the McConnell Foundation, our mission is to help build better communities through philanthropy. We value excellence and integrity, using our personnel, facilities, and financial resources to create and support positive change. We are honored to be a part of Operation Holiday Salute on KCNR.
Join Aaron and Bill for We the People Radio, Sundays, noon until 2.
It's conservative talk radio with a liberal dose of humor. Get the whole story from experts around the world delivering facts rather than opinion.
Missed a show? Busy at noon? No problem. Listen to our free archives when you have time. No commercial interruptions or download restrictions. We the People Radio.
.us.
What shall we do about them?
This
is Carl Bott.
And Ted Leidy.
We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
Even cooking sometimes. People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up. Fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.